Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short
the
routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Gill, Matt Harmon here with you on Reception Perception, the show. All right, here we are. We are getting into franchise tag mode here, Matt, where franchise tags can be applied. As we enter into this very pivotal moment in this offseason, how are you feeling, Matt?
You know, I'm feeling good. This is a little bit of kind of like as quiet as the NFL can ever get. This is
yes.
Sort of a quieter time. You know, we're kind of at the back end of coaching cycle news, which I know we'll talk a little bit about today. You know, there's only three offensive coordinator vacancies left: Kansas City, Philadelphia, and Denver. Of course, those three teams all have like offensive first head coaches, so we'll see how they end up kind of filling those vacancies. But really, most of the coaching stuff is kind of settled. We haven't quite got to the combine yet, which is where things really start to pick back up. So this is, again, as quiet as the NFL can get. This is about it, as quiet as it gets.
Well, you know what it is, too? It's a Super Bowl hangover. You know, it's like we just completed the season and everyone is just taking a breath right now, which is much needed if you cover the NFL, because the NFL never sleeps for sure. But I did want to talk about specifically for the Chargers. How about Keenan Allen? This reportedly, maybe the Chargers could move on from the great wide receiver, 10-year vet. And Keenan could be a free agent going into this offseason. We've talked about the Chargers, I think, at length on this program. Mm-hmm. But this is a team that needs wide receivers. For them to cut a guy in Keenan Allen, boy, I tell you what, that's when I first read it, it surprised me. When I saw the money, it made sense. But golly, man, this team absolutely needs to get some receiver help.
Yeah, Daniel Popper of The Athletic, I think, is the one who's floated this out there. And the whole theory behind it is the Chargers are cap strapped, and it's always tough when you're cap strapped and you're about to give your quarterback big money, right? But that's sort of the point of when you have the Bengals, for example, have the seventh most cap space in the NFL and they're staring down the Joe Burrow extension. The Eagles obviously are staring down the Jalen Hurts extension. They're not quite in the same position as the LA Chargers, but they also were just participating in the Super Bowl. They have the 19th most cap space in the NFL. They're obviously pressed up against a little bit. They've got decisions to make. We know that. The Chargers are in a bit of a problem because a lot of their big swings haven't worked out. You know, Khalil Mack was fine, whatever. They'll probably restructure him, maybe even potentially move on from him. You also have JC Jackson. That did not work out as a free agent acquisition in year one. We'll see how that goes in year two. But that puts you in a position then, again, when you're staring down, like, we're going to have to give Justin Herbert this monster contract extension here pretty soon. Also, isn't it funny that, like, the two guys, putting Jalen Hurts and Philadelphia aside, the two guys that, like, we know need big, fat quarterback extensions that are coming up and are eligible this year are Joe Burrow and the Los Angeles Chargers. And those are two of the least spendy, if you want to be nice about it. They're the least spendy, most gun-shy to hand out big money contracts, you know, the teams in the NFL. So that's pretty interesting. But, yeah, man, I mean, the Chargers are going to have to make tough decisions this offseason because they're currently $19 million over the current salary cap. So does Keenan Allen become one of these tough decisions? It's possible.
Yeah. Again, when I saw that, I was so surprised. But again, when you look at the financials, man, it does make a lot of sense. I mean, but you know, okay.
Stinks though, because he's the only guy who can get open.
Well, that, I mean, yeah, exactly. Right. So, okay. Look, they're obviously not going to spend, I don't think, at free agency to bring in wide receiver help. I would not imagine. Okay, now they probably try to address this in the draft. They're probably going to try to get some speed. But boy, I think it kind of puts them under the gun. Okay, now that being said, Keenan Allen can obviously still play. This guy is still a good player. Okay, but where does he potentially land? He all of a sudden, I would imagine, becomes a very premium name. That some of these teams, wide receiver needy teams, are going to be pursuing hotly. Where would you like to see Keenan Allen go?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the cap charge is a big deal. And the same thing when we talked about, we posted the clip of talking about, you know, DeAndre Hopkins potentially being a trade target for the Chiefs. And the first thing that people say is like, well, they're not spending $27 million right. a year to bring in DeAndre Hopkins. This is what I think people have to wrap their minds around. Like, I don't care about like the name of these guys, right? Like DeAndre Hopkins, the name, or Keenan Allen, the name. Think about like where they are at this point in the career.
Right.
Like if somebody trades for DeAndre Hopkins, it's coming with like a salary reduction. Like these guys are not, it's not like trading for AJ Brown right. or even like Devontae Adams or Tyreek Hill when theirs goes where those guys are at this point in their career. You know, Keenan Allen's not like ancient or anything, right. but he's certainly on the back nine of his career.
Sure.
And he was dealing with nagging serious injuries, at the end of last year. And even at different points, like I don't think quite looked his best even when he was back there playing. So that's a thing in the back of your mind. But at the same time, if I'm a team like the Chicago Bears, you know, or even potentially the Giants, I know we'll talk about them in a second. These teams that are flush with cap, with resources, draft picks and money to spend, like I would at least call the Chargers before they cut him and say like, hey, what is it going to take? If I send you a fourth or a fifth round pick, and I know that sounds crazy, like Keenan Allen for a fourth round pick. Well, if you're the Chargers and you're going to have to cut this guy anyways, like, yeah, you will trade Keenan Allen for a fourth or fifth round pick.
Right.
And you could potentially trade him to a team like the Bears or the Falcons, who we talked about as a potential fit with Juju last week. Like, again, these teams that are flush with money to spend. So I don't know. I think there's a chance that, I always rag on the Ravens for, you know, just getting guys at the back end of their career.
Yeah.
I know I said last week that I'd love to see them get more of like a young yeah. kind of ascending guy, but I'd still throw the Ravens out there. Obviously they have a lot of cap space right now, but they need to account for what are they going to do with Lamar Jackson.
Right.
So I don't know. I think there's a chance that like Keenan Allen might not just get straight up cut. He might end up getting traded. And again, if you're thinking of those teams that can take on his salary while also probably giving it a little bit of a reduction away from that like $21 million or $20 million yeah. dollars that it's sitting at right now, I would nominate that. I would obviously you're going to nominate the Bears in that discussion. Anytime you could do that because they have a stupid amount of space to take guys at $97 million on the available cap space right now. This is wild. Like,
yeah.
you got to spend it on somebody, right? Absolutely. You might as well spend it on somebody who could make Justin Fields' life a little bit easier.
Yeah, just to clarify some of these numbers, this is according to Spotrac, but Keenan Allen in 2023 would carry a $21.7 million cap hit. That is just, I think that's a non-starter. And again, I want to clarify too. I think I said he was going to be entering his age 32 year. It's actually age 31. So 2023, he will be 31 years old, but it will be his 11th season. I don't know, man. I got to be honest with you. I was a little taken aback by that because Keenan Allen is still a very good player.
I know. And it's the position that we think LA needs so much help at wide receiver.
Right.
And I know that Keenan Allen's a big name. Mike Williams is a big name. Josh Palmer had some big games here and there, or games where he got a lot of targets and stuff like that. But I think Keenan Allen's still their most valuable player because he can get open. And, you know, I think him and Justin Herbert are on such a great, they have such great timing and chemistry with each other at this point that like, I know that at least in the previous offense, I know that Keenan Allen was allowed to do a lot of like freelancing. It's like, okay, if the route depth tells you to be at 7 yards, but you're actually at 8, but you're open. Like we're fine with that. These are guys that like, it's more of like, you can be allowed to freelance, right? These veteran route runners who are great at getting separation. And they just don't have anybody that can do that stuff. It's like, I think long term, maybe Josh Palmer would be a little bit better of like a big slot receiver, maybe than he would be as an outside guy. But I mean, good God, like he's just not at all. He's just not at all like where Keenan Allen is at this point as a separator, as a route runner, as a technician. And that's what may has made Keenan Allen so good and so quarterback friendly. The Chargers will definitely miss him, especially as they're transitioning to a new scheme here under Kellen Moore. Man, I don't know. I mean, I think they will obviously have to go young. They will have to obviously have to get speed at that position, right. And they'll probably have to do it in the draft because, yeah, they can't like go around and cut. They can't go Keenan Allen. They can't cut Keenan Allen and go and turn around and sign
that would make
a receiver in the free agency. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Keenan Allen, according to reception perception data, 74.2% success rate versus man coverage. I mean, again, just far and away. The best score on the Chargers. You look at somebody like Mike Williams, he's really struggled against man, according to your data, Matt, 61.5% success rate versus man coverage. And at the end of the day, man, you just got to beat that guy across from you. And Keenan Allen is clearly that dude.
Yeah, especially on routes that are base routes, you know, NFL routes, like curls, digs, slants, stuff like that. Obviously, working inside out, Keenan Allen could do that. I think Mike Williams is a weird player because he almost like, I think he was really, he obviously was a first round pick. Wasn't he seventh overall pick in 2017? He went from being almost kind of dogged too much for those first few years in his career when people thought he was like, he couldn't get open at
right.
all. Like 61.5% is not one of his better scores throughout the course of his career. It's not a great score by any means.
No.
But we're not talking about him as like a 10th percentile separator. We're talking about him maybe in that 30th percentile type range. He's a little bit better at beating zone coverage, but his best routes are like vertical routes. You know, I mean, he's going to win on go routes. He's going to win on post routes, corner routes, stuff like that. The occasional crossing route, the occasional slant. He's just a limited guy in terms of where he can get separation. His big stuff is winning downfield and winning in contested situations. But that, again, I would ask the question to people like, who is the number one receiver in the NFL that struggles to get separation? Like, I don't think there is that guy. Like, those guys are always number twos. Those, like, you know, you try to run your passing game through a player like that, it causes a lot of problems, despite how much production they might put up, stuff like that. Think about a Kenny Galladay type. Think about like a, you know, Devontae Parker type, the Cortland Suttons of the world. Like, these guys just don't end up becoming legit number one receivers. And I think that's kind of where Mike Williams is topped out at being a really good number two. But I think after he had that big season in 2021, a lot of people, especially fantasy players, kind of overrated Mike Williams. So he's one of these guys that throughout the course of his career, I think has been a little bit underrated to a little bit overrated to now. Again, I think he's a really quality starting NFL receiver, but he's not a number one. Josh Palmer, I don't think has a future as a number one. I think he's like more of a three. So, and maybe not even like a great three or anything like that. So they have a big problem there where if they lose Keenan Allen, who's the problem with this wide receiver core was already a lack of separation. That problem becomes even more glaring. And like, I think wide receiver then becomes the biggest need on the team potentially. If you lose Keenan Allen, like how are we, and you still don't have a great offensive line. So how are we running a successful passing game here in Los Angeles without Keenan Allen? I'm not sure.
Yeah. To your point, Joshua Palmer, you've graded out in terms of 2021 season data, not favorably, Matt. 54.4% success rate versus man, 68% success rate versus zone coverage, both very below league average. As a matter of fact, when you kind of look at it like a player comparison, I guess he's a little bit worse off than like, let's say like an Alan Lazard. I think that's probably, what we're talking about here, which is again, and I don't think anyone's confusing Alan Lazard to be a potential superstar here or a number one. He's just a person that, you know, Aaron Rodgers trusted, and somebody that Packers offense relied on as a number two, I guess would be probably a fair assessment of where he's at.
That's a great player comparison, like an Alan Lazard type, because, you know, Lazard had 100 targets this year, 788 yards, six touchdowns. He had eight touchdowns the year prior. And then you look at Josh Palmer this past year, you know, it's not that dissimilar, right? Where he had some big games, 107 targets,
right.
769 yards, three touchdowns, But I think people probably hold more optimism for a guy like Josh Palmer because he was in his second season.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that like guys don't get better, but guys also they are who they are. And there's only so much room to grow a skill set. Like, yeah, he's definitely going to get better at certain parts of the game. You know, Alan Lazard is a guy who got better from his first year where he was an undrafted free agent and did nothing to eventually growing into being a really high quality role player,
right,
for the Green Bay Packers. But did he fundamentally change as a player from year one from in terms of what he does and his best strengths? Like, I think you get your strength stronger. Mm-hmm. You don't suddenly make your weaknesses strengths. And I think that's like a guy like Lazard, like he continued to kind of hone those strengths that he had in his game as a guy that was like reliable, had good hands, was a really good blocker. I know that's like damning with faint praise there as a, as a receiver, when you say the guy's a really good blocker, right, but it matters. He's a pretty good football player, but like you probably want him to be your three. And I think that's probably a really good comparison for Josh Palmer, who I think probably should be a team's three, not necessarily like, all right, he's the guy that we drafted in our second season, or he's the guy that we drafted, he's coming into his third season, let's promote him. I still think that would lead to problems in your passing game if you do that with the Chargers.
Well, and plus, I think when you're taking a look at upside for any athlete inside the NFL, you do have to look at measurables, right? Like, can he just start to become, forget about the tactician part, right? Like, yeah, you can improve on that, but what's his ceiling as an athlete, right? And Joshua Palmer is a very much an average athlete, right? Ran a 4.5 240, 34-inch vertical. So again, the upside to me when you're talking about Joshua Palmer, he looks more of like, if he's going to cap out somewhere in fantasy land, it's going to be because of volume. I just don't think he's going to be that guy that is just, you know, one of the certified, you know, number ones in the NFL. All right. You mentioned the Giants there as being.
One more thing on this. And I think this is important. Like, because you're going to see, you know, let's say Keenan Allen gets cut. You're going to see these like threads on Twitter. It's like, Josh Palmer had this many games with double digit targets, stuff like that. Like, wheels up, rocket emojis, yeah, shit like that. You're going to see that on the internet. Like, wheels, I get up. It. There were these games where, you know, Josh Palmer had these targets. Yeah. Like, let's think about this. Denver Broncos, they beat the Denver Broncos in overtime. Remember that game? 19-16. Josh Palmer had 12 targets. The offense stinks. The Atlanta Falcons, they barely beat the Falcons. Josh Palmer, 10 targets, 106 yards. That's great. But they barely beat the freaking Falcons, who can't stop anything on defense.
Right.
Lost the Kansas City Chiefs. But, you know, not that this was a big, bad game or anything. 27-30, mm-hmm. Fine. 10 targets for Josh Palmer in that game. They lose to the Raiders, 20-27. Josh Palmer has 11 targets for 60 yards. Like, the offense stunk when Palmer was getting a lot of those targets, or at least was certainly underperforming expectations despite having really good quarterback play in Justin Herbert. I think I always want to caution people, you know, at sort of extrapolating those things. Like, yeah, I do. Overall, I do believe like targets are earned, all that stuff. You know, a guy like Deontay Johnson, I've talked about that. Targets are earned. There's a reason he's getting those targets. But when guys are falling at targets because of injuries and the offense still stinks despite having really good quarterback play in Justin Herbert, that's not good. That's not a good three-way combination.
Well, I think what you're hinting at is that, well, first of all, look, there's going to be a new coordinator in town. Okay. So who knows where these guys fit into the puzzle pieces. Right. But I think to what you're saying is that at least suggests that, you know, if there is an infusion of talent, maybe Joshua Palmer could be left on the wayside. And I think that's probably pretty accurate as well. Okay. So now
find number three. That's it. But that's probably about the best we're looking at.
No, I mean, and again, whether we're talking about real life, and I know on this podcast in particular, we really kind of like merge those lines between, you know, real life and fantasy, but you know, real life, if that's what, you know, he's getting, if that's commensurate with his salary, then great. You know, in fantasy, are you drafting the number three on the Chargers offense? I don't know. you know what I mean? So I don't know. I would probably say from a fantasy perspective, better best ball player than he is in a redraft or dynasty setting, at least in my opinion.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Reception, Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
All right, so we mentioned the Giants there as a potential landing spot there for Keenan Allen. But the Giants have a very interesting offseason. We've talked about this ad nauseum as well. Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, they're both up for contracts. Now, Daniel Jones, he just switched midstream. He just switched his agent, man. He wants more guaranteed money. He wants more average salary as well. Giants are like, yeah, go for it. We'll just franchise tag you, pal. Look, bottom line is Daniel Jones did not have a great statistical season. I would say this, Daniel Jones did make an improvement with Brian Daboll as a quarterback in 2022 versus 2021. Now, where does that leave him in the hierarchy of things? I don't know. I'll leave that up to the professionals, but I would be surprised if this guy averaged, you know, 25 to 28 million per year, which is apparently what he is looking for. So I don't know.
He's looking for way more than that. He wants like,
he wants 30 per
35. Dude. And I mean, if they franchise tag him, the franchise tag for quarterbacks is like 32.4 million.
Right.
But I think, well, then there was the leak that he actually wants 45, which like maybe that comes from the team.
Yeah.
Like, so that when they sign him for 38 or 37, they're like, ah, see, we got a deal. But yeah, he definitely wants to get paid for sure.
Right. Which is, again, him switching agents in the middle of all that, is an interesting move. I don't know. Does that reek of desperation? I don't know, man. The bottom line is, it's not like this guy put up great stats at any point. And then again, his game tape is really up and down as well. So I don't know. I'm not sure what can he really stand on, Matt, to say, okay, I need $35 million a year. Like, where does he, I guess, how does he go about doing that?
Well, the problem right now is just, that the NFL has no middle class in terms of quarterbacks.
Correct.
Like who are the middle class quarterbacks right now? Like, remember when guys like Andy Dalton and even like Colin Kaepernick got those like middle class quarterback deals? Like who is that now?
I mean, I'd probably say like Geno Smith, Jared Goff is like the classic middle class quarterback in the NFL right now.
I get that, but I'm talking about like from a contract standpoint,
right?
Like who,
it's all or nothing.
What are these? It really is all or nothing right now. You just look at like the average per year guys. I mean, you talk about like Jared Goff, that he's making like $30 million against the cap this year. And I mean, Geno is another guy who's entering the last year of his contract. So he'll be in free agency this year. He's a guy who could get franchise tagged right now this year. So. And I mean, we saw a guy like Derek Carr, who I think would potentially be a perfectly good candidate for the quarterback middle class. He just got cut, right? Because they didn't want to pay him that. Like right now, Jared Goff, $33.5 million per year,
right,
as a quarterback.
And that's number 10.
And you think that that's like the quarterback middle class. Yeah. And I would agree with you. I mean, Carson Wentz, he's not going to play on this, but he's probably going to get cut,
right,
or traded or whatever. 32. Per year salary. Ryan Tannehill's like 29.5, and you know, Tannehill's a guy who's sort of, he's like in that middle class, I think, too. Dak Prescott signed a $40 million deal. Matt Stafford, $40 million deal. Kirk Cousins, the consummate middle class quarterback is like $35 million a year right now. So if there, if Daniel Jones is standing on something, it would be that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now, do I think he's proven like what Kirk Cousins has proven, even, or Jared Goff? No,
no,
definitely not. But I think based on what he did last year, and then you know, the current quarterback market, that's, I think, where he had, where he, the leg that he's going to stand on. Now, do you think the Giants, do you think they feel the same way? I doubt it.
I don't know. I will say this: in 16 games last year, this man threw 15 touchdowns. That's interesting to say the least, when you've got 15 touchdowns over 16 games. Now, I will say this, obviously improved his turnover ratio as well, just 5 interceptions last year, which would be a career low. I won't add in all his rushing, rushing numbers as well. Obviously, he does some stuff on the ground. He had 7 rushing touchdowns as well. So
great rusher.
Yeah, real, a good runner, right? Obviously, gets into a little bit of trouble too with the fumbles there. But again, he absolutely shored that up too, right? So just 6 fumbles last year, and I don't even think those were all fumbles lost. But anyways, to your point though, we're talking about no middle ground here, no middle class for quarterbacks. Jared Goff is number 10 at $33.5 million. Ryan Tannehill, 29.5. I'm not going to include Matt Ryan and Carson Wentz because those guys are not going to, you know, play on these contracts. But after that, we're looking at like Marcus Mariota at like 9.5. And then everyone else is on a rookie deal. Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Herbert. So all these dudes are on rookie deals. Otherwise, you're talking, you're correct. You're talking over $30 million a year. So if Daniel Jones is asking for that, I guess that would make a lot of sense. It's just, maybe Daniel Jones creates the middle class, because I tell you what, I can't imagine him getting 30 to 35 million, but I can see him getting, 25 million. I guess that would make some sense in terms of upside. Maybe he wants to sign a short-term deal. I don't know. That would be something.
Yeah. For me, if I'm the Giants, and I think this is where I think this is probably what's going to end up happening, is they're going to franchise tag him and then just like say, like, well, it just makes perfect sense. It does bring up complications for another player that we're going to talk about here, with Saquon Barkley. Like, what do you do with Barkley then? We'll get to that in a second. But for the Daniel Jones thing exclusively, like, why would you not want to just franchise tag him? $32 million, mm-hmm. whatever. It is what it is. And see if he takes another jump in the second year playing with Brian Daboll. Now, there's obviously risks to that, because let's just imagine
the Kirk Cousins situation.
Right. Let's just imagine that, or Dak Prescott, right? Because like the Cowboys clearly, for different reasons, didn't want to commit to Dak Prescott at the time. And then he goes out and he has big numbers. He gets hurt. And then they still have to give him the extension, because it's like, well, what are we going to do? Right. What if Daniel Jones goes and, like, just in a hypothetical world, balls the F out, because we know he wasn't surrounded by receiving talent last year.
Yeah, nothing.
Let's say they get, a Jacoby Myers or a Juju, and they draft a guy, and maybe they take a big swing on a Keenan Allen or a DeAndre Hopkins, something like that. Maybe another wide receiver we're not thinking about becomes available on the trade market. Of course, all that stuff gets more complicated when you start having a $32 million quarterback on your salary books,
right,
and Daniel Jones. But just live in a hypothetical world where he goes out and balls the F out. And then it's like, all right, well, now what do we do? Now we franchise tag him again? Are we now going to pay him whatever Joe Burrow makes this offseason, plus maybe extra? Are we in that spot with Daniel Jones? It gets a little tricky if you don't extend the quarterback right away when you can. But I don't know. I think that Jones, I don't want to take too much away from him, because I think he took dramatic improvements in his game and made big leaps this past year in a steady environment. We expect that environment to continue. Daboll's back.
Yes.
Mike Kafka didn't get a head coaching job.
Right.
He's back. Their receiver corps should only get better. Their offensive line, some of the youth on it, like Evan Neal, should get better. But my God, I mean, are you really going to commit this to Daniel Jones? I don't know. If I was the Giants, I would just franchise tag it and see what he does next year. Because then if you just let him walk at the end of next season, if he doesn't show another step of improvement, now you potentially have a really nice spot for a rookie quarterback or, you know, a distressed asset quarterback to come in here afterwards.
All right. So again, we talk about some of the dominoes that could fall from this, right? So if Daniel Jones does get franchised and it is kind of sort of looking like they want to go that direction, well, that kind of leaves Saquon Barkley twisting in the wind there. And I think Saquon himself, in this, you know, when the Giants were kind of coming to a close, talked about he'd be okay with the franchise. He'd be okay with a moderate deal. I don't think he's looking to break the bank here to stay with New York. But it's such a savvy move, I think, from the Giants' perspective. And I feel bad because, like, running backs, I think, are overly devalued now. And I know that's, like, even saying even saying that feels like a hot take, right? Unless you're just all the way out on running backs and just literally just say running backs don't matter at all, then you're not part of the cool kids, right? But that's okay. I think it's a savvy move, though, by the Giants because, again, you look at the running back market, Matt, and man, there's a lot of great running backs that are unrestricted free agents. And then on top of that, what I'm hearing about the draft class as well, everything that I'm reading and seeing about the draft class, there's a lot of great running backs in this draft too. So, boy, Saquon Barkley would obviously be the blue chipper of that group. But you look at this group, man, Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders, even Jamal Williams, who, again, he was a bane to fantasy managers. But in real life, this dude was a value add for the Detroit Lions. You know what I mean? Tony Pollard in that mix. I thought Deontay Foreman played really good football. There's just a lot of names out there that you know could drive that the overall market price for running backs down because man, there are a lot of great run supply is much higher than demand right now.
Yeah. And how many like wide open depth charts are there where it's like, all right, you drop a guy in there and move heaven and earth to get Saquon Barkley, move heaven and earth to get Josh Jacobs or something like that. That's going to be pretty tough. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, man, like after the dust settles from free agency, and the draft, because like Bijan Robinson is a consensus, you know, dude in the draft. Right. And there's some other guys that people like as well. It's going to be like when the damn meteor hit the dinosaurs, man. Like things are the entire ecosystem is going to get upset here. You know, things are the running back landscape is going to look wildly different from what we're thinking and imagining with depth charts right now to what it's going to look like in May, man. It is going to be dramatically different. A lot of fallout from that. And Barkley, it's tough because, okay, let's say the Giants, they franchise tag Daniel Jones and, you know, Joe Shane, the general manager did kind of seem like at his year end presser, he was more like warm and fuzzies when talking about Daniel Jones. And, you know, we know that this is like a forward thinking, front office that probably does believe in like, look, we need to build out of the passing game. We know, Joe Shane is like a salary cap guy. He's probably, you know, puckering a little bit when he thinks about giving Saquon Barkley, like, you know, the one of these game changing running back contracts. But damn, dude, like Barkley is the heart and soul of the team. You know, he's a guy that like was so important to the offense. Like imagine that offense with like Matt Breida instead of Saquon Barkley. Like I know we think about running back, you know, like you said, running backs don't matter. The production is replaceable. Well, certain guys are definitely above that baseline and are, you know, our game changers. Barkley absolutely is one of those. Think about the game against Washington, the second one, like he was dominant in that game. He was like a transcendent type of player and their offense was just so much better because of that. So it's tough to imagine them just letting him walk. But I mean, if he doesn't get the franchise tag, like if you're Barkley, why wouldn't you then test the market? And then I think, you know, things are mildly interesting. Like with the Bears, we'll always talk about the Bears when it comes to money to burn because they got it, baby. But like you're a run-based offense with Justin Fields. Like why not just break the bank for a guy like Barkley, you know, when you have 90 something million in cap space to make the offense better?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios where he could land, but it's just to me, like I said, because the market is flooded with high quality players, I mean, because think about it, like you could get Saquon Barkley, but like, let's say you go down the list here a little bit, right? And you're talking about, okay, well, I could also get Kareem Hunt for like 1/5 the price, you know? It makes it tough, right? So the overall, I think overall market ends up getting pretty depressed. So, and again, too, like There are some really good running backs in this draft class, man. So that's also going to make life interesting too. I mean, actually, it kind of dovetails into really like what Aaron Jones did in Green Bay. I bet you anything, Aaron Jones looked at the market and said, dude, I got to take what I can get. You know what I mean? And I think Green Bay met him halfway, and that's why he is going to end up coming back to Green Bay in this weird, you know, two running back tandem 50-50 split with A.J. Dillon as well. So a lot of interesting movement could happen in the running back space. And of course, if you play fake football, it's the most interesting time when you take a look at all the movement for some of these running backs. What are some of these depth charts going to look like in a month from now, 2 months from now, 3 months from now? And that's going to be a big topic of conversation, no doubt about it.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reception, Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
All right, KC, we talk about brain drain sometimes. Eric Bieniemy goes from Kansas City to now Washington, becomes their offensive coordinator slash assistant head coach. I don't know. There doesn't seem to be a lot of, hot takes or anything about Eric Bieniemy going to Washington. It kind of just... there seems to just be mostly a giant shrug, right? Because it's, I think people have attributed most of the success, offensive success, to the head coach and to the quarterback and less to the OC.
Yeah, it's tough because I think most of the conversation with Eric Bieniemy revolves around why is he not a head coach? Why is
well,
he
that's
not
a fair conversation. Coaching? Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's a whole nother conversation to have there. Obviously it's tough to parse the success in terms of who's more responsible, Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes, right, or Eric Bieniemy. Well, it's not like that stopped, you know, Matt Nagy from getting a head coaching job when it was Kansas City or Doug Peterson before that, right? Like these are guys that worked under Andy Reid, still got head coaching jobs. Maybe Bieniemy is just like an all-time awful interviewer. I know he had, like, when he was younger, there was like legal issues, stuff like that. Right. But obviously we know there's a whole conversation around there's a whole legitimate conversation that had about diverse candidates and everything like that. Obviously, I think Kansas City was okay letting Bieniemy go because Andy Reid has gone to bat for him as a head coaching candidate. Like, why is this guy not like stood up in front of league owners and, you know, said that this guy should be a head coaching candidate? I think this is sort of, and whether you think this is right or not, I think that the truth of the matter lies in like Bieniemy, and I think the Chiefs agreed with him on this, like thought that this was a career move he had to make, was go call plays, separate himself from Andy Reid to go sort of prove his resume. Again, whether you think that's right or not, I think that's where he is thinking. That's where the right. Chiefs were thinking with okay letting him walk. Let's focus on the KC side of this first. I don't know how much this moves the needle, which maybe again speaks to the value of Bieniemy and all that stuff, but we know that Andy Reid is great. Like whenever you have an offensive play calling head coach, you can have this sort of brain drain.
You can.
And you can lose and you can keep the train on the track. Think about what San Francisco has dealt with over the last 3 years. Their coaching staff gets just raided
every year.
Raided every year. Same thing with like the Rams under Sean McVay. And obviously the Rams had a lot of issues this year, but the 49ers are always able to keep that train on the track because they have Kyle Shanahan. The system remains the same, etc. Also, I know Matt Nagy's like, you know, he's not the sexiest guy in the world right now, but he did go back there. He's probably just going to become the offensive coordinator. And there's also talk like he might be the successor to Andy.
Oh, Ray. God.
Be hilarious.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Bro, wouldn't that be hilarious if, like, you know, Andy Reid retires in 3 years and Matt Nagy just becomes, like, inherits the gold mine that is, like, Patrick Mahomes in what would still be at this point in 3 years or whatever. Yeah. Like, he's still squarely in the prime of his
career.
Oh,
for sure.
Matt Nagy's of Bears fans just weeping as Matt Nagy's like holding a Super Bowl trophy and 2030 or something like that. I mean, wouldn't that just be brutal?
You can old takes me. Matt Nagy will never be a Super Bowl winning head coach. Never.
I don't care.
He can have Patrick Mahomes in his prime. He will never be a Super Bowl winning head coach. It's not gonna happen. You can all
the Bears went to the playoffs in his first year. I want all the listeners.
If you want to old takes me, you can. It ain't gonna happen. Some of the on-field decision making was just like, what are we doing out here? No adjustments in the second half, and just as the season wore on, every single Matt Nagy team would devolve. It's like, no, that's not the dude. That is not the dude, man. But you're right. Anything could happen if you got Patrick Mahomes, for God's sakes.
Right. Yeah. When your second, you sometimes then your second half adjustment could just be, hey, Patrick, why don't you go bail me out, baby? That's a lot easier. I still maintain that like Matt Nagy had some pretty good ideas on offense and pretty good. Like, I thought his offenses were pretty well designed. And it's just like when you have Nick Foles or Andy Dalton or Mitch Trubisky running them, probably not the best. And also, I maintain that he was on tilt for the rest of his time as Bears coach, and especially the year after there was that like missed kick in the playoffs in his first year. Like, remember when it was like, oh, you clearly have a quarterback problem, but you're staging this like massive kicker competition. It's like, yeah, I'm currently bleeding out, but I'm really trying to solve this paper cut on my left pinky finger or whatever. So that's a long detour to say that Matt Nagy, Super Bowl winning head coach in 2030. You heard it here first, although James completely disagrees with me. I'm just saying.
But that's great.
On a serious note,
yeah,
I think the Chiefs will still stay right on track. It's really probably not a big deal, you know, for Kansas City to lose guys. It's going to happen. This won't be the last time.
But is it potentially a bigger deal for Washington?
I think it could be, man. And it's just everything with Washington comes back to two questions.
Okay.
One, who's going to own the team this time next year?
Geez.
And two, who is going to be the quarterback like this time in 3 months or whatever?
Okay.
So, and I do kind of think like I've kind of come, I don't know, full circle on this whole Sam Howell thing. You know, my dad's favorite quarterback, Sam Howell, UNC's finest.
Nice.
Oh my God, the amount of times I've had to talk about Sam Howell with my dad, it's quite a thing. But anyways,
can I ask a legitimate question? Why did it take that long to unveil Sam Howell? I'm just confused as all get out. Like, you watch Sam Howell play and you're like, oh, this guy can make some throws. Like, why did it take so damn long to see Sam Howell? I don't understand.
It's very weird to go from we are not playing Sam Howell until like we're completely eliminated from playoff contention in 2022 to now like Ron Rivera saying to anybody that would listen on Radio Row, like, we're walking in to 2023 with Sam Howell as our QB1. I think
what?
I don't know. Very, very, very weird. So what? I think there's a couple things to play here. And I do think part of this comes back to the ownership thing. I don't think that they're in a position. I think the team knows, everybody on the team knows, whether it's general manager, everybody in the front office, coaching staff. I think they know the team's going to get sold. And I think they don't want to make a big giant commitment to a Derek Carr type of quarterback or a Jimmy Garoppolo type of quarterback. They don't want to make the Aaron Rodgers trade for sure when they know the team is going to be under new ownership quite soon. Most likely, I think we all see the writing on the wall. This is probably the end, the merciful end for Daniel Snyder as the Washington team owner. And I think that dovetails into the Sam Howell thing where I think we might get, and you know, this is all I want. I want like a legit quarterback competition. This is not as sexy as the potential Trey Lance, Brock Purdy, two guys enter, one guy leaves quarterback competition, but we might well get like a, I don't know, mid-range veteran and Sam Howell quarterback competition in Washington.
Okay.
And I think that's the future of it. And I do think Eric Bieniemy, coming back to him, look, I don't know. Again, it's tough to parse out like What is Bieniemy? What is Andy Reid? But it certainly is not 100-0 or 90-10. Like, there are definite parts of that. Like, there are times where Bieniemy was calling plays for the Chiefs. There are times where he was obviously setting up game plans for the Chiefs. Like, it's not as if he's just doing, he's not in there like mopping the freaking floors, which is, I think, what some people like to make it out to be. He's clearly a part of the team's offensive success. They could still be great without him, and he could still go be great in Washington. Again, not the best situation to walk into. It's the freaking Commanders. Yeah. They hardly ever get anything right. But I do think with that talent on the team, good running backs, we love the receivers here at Reception Perception that they got there at Washington. I think if he can get Sam Howell to be like an average starting quarterback, or they get a Garoppolo type, a Teddy Bridgewater type, I mean, God forbid a Jameis Winston type in there, like they could have some fun on offense.
How surprised were you when they let go of Scott Turner?
You know, I'm a Turner bro.
You are. Yes. That's why I throw it out to you, pal. You know, funny thing, Matt, literally, I could not think of anyone in the football media landscape that would even like care at all. You're the only person.
Oh, there are dozens of, what are you talking? There, James, there are dozens of us.
I know,
there are dozens
of you, but I'm just saying none of them like that are prominently working in the football media landscape. I couldn't think of anyone. You're the only person. That I think would care.
There are definitely others that care.
Okay.
I will say I'm not the only one, because there are dozens of us. But Scott Turner, I think this was which, you know, this meant something to Rivera, because he was part of the Friends and Family program.
For sure.
You know, he was Norv Turner's son, brought him from Carolina, you know, the whole thing. I think that this was hey, we have to do something, so we're going to go ahead and fire Scott. And that's part of it. The sort of like, hey, my job's on the line, so let me just go ahead and fire this guy, Scott Turner. And there are legit, it's not like the offense was good.
No.
I think that Scott Turner, and now if I'm being serious about it, I think that Scott Turner has really good ideas. I think he's got great, the offense was very well designed. The passing game in particular was really well designed. However, some of the actual play calling and like the within game sequences of the play calls were not always very good. I think, you know, particularly some of the choices made in terms of like when to run and pass, when to get too cute, even if the play designs are nice, you don't always just have to go to the Curtis Samuel rushing plays. you could just run the ball with Brian Robinson, right? Especially when you're going against the Giants and you can run on the Giants. But so I wasn't that surprised to see it happen, although I was disappointed. I do think, hey man, him going to the Raiders as a passing game, he's the passing game coordinator. Yeah. That's great for Scott. That's his job.
There you go.
Go design some fun stuff. Get Josh McDaniels can be a little bit archaic and prehistoric with some of his passing game concepts. Get Scott Turner in there to freshen things up. Somebody who's not just a New England bro, is Scott Turner. He'll be great. He'll be great with the Raiders job. I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you, young Turner.
I am curious to see what kind of impact that would have. And I'm actually very curious to see what kind of impact the Andy Reid coaching tree and Eric Bieniemy will have in Washington. Again, as you mentioned, some pretty good wide receivers there. Eric Bieniemy, I think he's got some toys there to unleash and potentially unlock with a guy like Sam Howell.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, if Sam Howell can play, they do need to get their offensive line better. I will acknowledge that. Their offensive line was bad last year. It was banged up. That's an area where they have to improve. Maybe that's part of the reason why they don't want to go balls to the walls with quarterback, right? Is that they want to sit there and say, all right, let's get our offensive line improved. Let's use draft resources, some of the money that we have available. You know, they're above the league average in terms of cap space right now, but they're 14th. They're not much above the league average in terms of the available cap space that they have. So maybe that's, again, why they don't want to take that big-ish swing at quarterback with the ownership decision coming up.
They totally should, though. Come on, man, go for it. You know, you got the wide receivers, you got running backs, man. Like, this is fertile ground for a veteran quarterback to come in and just elevate the entire franchise.
Yeah, but it's tough because they are in the NFC, and the NFC is ripe for the taking. 100%. You know, we
Oh my
we
God.
Don't, we don't. I know the Jets are the most popular destination for Rodgers and Carr and all that stff, but we don't need any more good quarterbacks in the AFC. We're good. We're good in the AFC. The NFC needs help right
yes.
now. Like, all of these guys should be trying to get their way into the NFC South.
I would love to see Rodgers in a Washington uniform. Like, I honestly think that would be awesome. Just like, give me, you know, give me Terry McLaurin and Aaron Rodgers. Give me that connection 170 times in an NFL season. Give me that. I would love that.
If Dan Snyder wasn't trying to avoid, like, you know, jail time or, you know, wasn't like persona non grata number one jail in the time. NFL right now,
golly.
I think you I'm kidding. But if he wasn't on the brink of like selling the team.
Yeah,
there'd be more steam behind that.
Yeah.
But as it stands right now, I think that's probably the biggest hang up. Like, it's not going to change the valuation of the Washington Commanders and whatever. Like, you're still going to sell them for like $7 billion. Like, they're going to the Penner totally. Bros bought the Walmart Bros bought the Denver Broncos for like $4.5 billion. Washington's going to blow that out of the water. You know, they're going to blow that out of the water when they sell that thing. Dan Snyder is going to get on his yacht and be in the middle of, you know, one of those seas over there in Europe. I don't know.
One of those seas. Right.
One of those seas over there on the other side of the world. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Sitting on his billions. But it just typically when teams are about to sell, I don't know. I mean, I guess Russell Wilson got traded to the Broncos when we knew that team was going to sell last year.
Right.
So maybe I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but it does from a pure like ownership standpoint, like to throw that out for a second, Washington is definitely at a position where we have just gotten, haven't gotten above average quarterback play in like 5 years, maybe longer than that. When's the last time they had above average quarterback play? Like Kirk Cousins?
That's it.
Like the last 5 years, we haven't even gotten close to average quarterback play. You know, we are, Ron Rivera's probably on the hot seat.
Yep.
Like trading a couple of first round picks would make sense. Not that it makes sense to trade a couple of first round picks for Rodgers, but it does make sense from a, we are ready, the offense is ready to drop a quarterback in here and go. But yeah, just, I don't know. I kind of, the other part of me does buy like the idea that they have a mid-range veteran and Sam Howell and duke it out here with Eric Bieniemy potentially designing a fun scheme. I don't know. It's not that sexy, but it might be the reality.
Well, you know, the other thing about Washington that I really like for Aaron Rodgers specifically is that the defense is not bad. The defense is close to being really good. You know, they need a little secondary help. But I think the boys up front, they're pretty good. The offensive line, as you mentioned, I don't think it's that bad. I think they had a couple of injuries and, you know, I think they can recover quickly. And the one thing we know about good quarterbacks is that, man, that great quarterbacks can elevate an offensive line as well by calling out protection and doing those kind of things, right? So, I think Washington is so, dude, they're so close from a talent perspective. They're not that far away. They just had maybe some of the worst quarterbacking in the NFL. And if you were to throw in a top five, top seven quarterback in the NFL into that system, man, that's looking pretty spicy. And I think that would put some, first of all, you get Aaron Rodgers in there, you're putting a lot of butts in the seats, man. So, to that financial,
you can even get into FedEx Field or whatever. I mean, my God, I've been to a lot of games at FedEx Field. That's what in Landover, freaking Maryland, for the team in Washington.
There you go.
What a disaster trying to get in and out of that hellhole of a stadium.
Perfect. Hey, listen. I think we've exhausted this conversation. And I tell you what, for an off-season podcast, this was a lot of fun. We are back with you again next week. But if you guys want some questions answered, if you got some, you know, pressing questions that you would like the boys here to answer, by all means, absolutely shoot us a tweet or jump into the Discord as well. Go to the website, receptionperception.com. And if you could, like and subscribe to the podcast and to Matt's YouTube page as well. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you.